I do a lot of research on software companies. I finally got around to banking software, which is one of the older, vertical-specific software categories, but also one of the more complicated. I am trying to speak to people who have deep experience with the cores as a customer, different parts of the stack, to understand the history of the business and how the tech stack has evolved, to have a view of what could happen in the next 5 to 10 years. How you came into the industry and what have you done over the years?
I began my career in core banking. Out of undergrad, I joined Jack Henry. I was 20 years old, going around in a private jet to different banks. I thought it was amazing, but then I would just work 100 hours every week inside the bank and never get out. Jack Henry was pretty local to where I went to school, which is how I ended up there. I had no clue what installing bank software meant, but they were in hyper-growth mode, so they didn't think. They simply hired me. I read the manuals and then was given a briefcase and put on the road. First, I was a non-tech, so I was training the bank on the software and mapping from the old system to the new one, handing that to the programmer who would then move that along. I did that for about a year, then taught myself to code. I was kind of a hybrid where I could actually understand the platform side, but then move the data and handle all the different components, both DDA, savings, CDs, the customer record, and loans. I had exposure to the full platform. I left and went to grad school at Washington University in St. Louis. I got a couple of master's degrees there and wanted to do more of a finance thing, so I went to AT&T and worked in finance. I realized that I wanted to be more on the operations side, so I went to Citibank. I was more on the process movement, so I would move from high-cost to low-cost areas, managing offshore programs. I did a little work on the core program for Citi. I think because of when Sandy Weill went through that massive acquisition period in the 90s, they never really consolidated the core platform. You were having 9 different loan processors, 13 GLs, which resulted in hodgepodge technology. I definitely saw how bad it can be. Then I went back to Jack Henry and managed a digital platform for them, which integrated both to the Banno 2020 Core Director Silver Lake platforms, as well as the Symitar Credit Union platform.
Did that digital platform become Banno?
It was NetTeller originally. We bought Banno soon after I joined. Banno told a better story than NetTeller. So they were the front end, and basically NetTeller was the back end, and we had to figure out that integration. I think they have updated a lot of that and rewritten some of the back end pieces of it. I did that for several years, then joined a community bank 6 years ago. They were on Fiserv Premier. I joined the Fiserv Advisory Committee, then I signed with Jack Henry, so they kicked me off the Advisory Committee. We did a core conversion and updated the tech stack. I left that bank earlier this year. I am now working with another bank who is also on Fiserv.
How would you describe the ease or difficulty of switching from Fiserv to Jack Henry?
The core companies make it as hard as they possibly can to move. It is not as hard as bankers think it is, but it is not an easy task, and it really comes down to how prepared you are. For me, I had Jack Henry experience. I hired 3 new employees that I worked with previously at Jack Henry. They were dedicated to the conversion. So instead of taking my overworked staff and saying, "You have another half part-time job in addition to your full-time job, and you are going to be stretched really thin," we brought in those extra resources. That is where I have seen the biggest hurdles, when banks don't prepare. From a personnel perspective, that is how hard it is. From a financial perspective, I spent nearly $1 million just getting my data out of Fiserv. My data was in their data center, and I was at their mercy. I learned during my install days that it was nice to schedule your conversion over a 3-day holiday. So if a Monday is a holiday, Memorial Day, Labor Day, they blocked those and said they wouldn't give me my data on those days. But it was the second year that Juneteenth was a holiday. We moved up our timeline because I forgot to block that as a Monday holiday. It just happened to fall that year. So we got our 3-day holiday core conversion, but it meant that we had to change that timeline. We were planning in September. I signed in September, and we expedited. We converted in 8 months. But it was only because I invested in those extra resources. These are 5 to 7 year contracts. They print money every year. It is the largest non-interest expense the banks have. The Jack Henry CFO once told me that every year I come in knowing where 80 to 90% of my revenue for the year is. All I have to do is find that 10% of growth that the market expects from me. That is just these recurring contracts. They do everything they can to make it hard.
I would love to have some more context on the bank you worked at. You spent $1 million just on extracting and converting the data. You were using Fiserv as a core, but what was the rest of the tech stack? What did you use for digital banking, loan origination, commercial loan origination, and digital account opening?
It was mostly Fiserv, and this bank was in desperate need of a tech update. There were a lot of things that had been the same for 20 years. The digital account opening was Kasasa, but it was basically an online form that got submitted to the branch, who then called the person to open it up. For lending, we used SageWorks. There was a very manual, paper-intensive process. LaserPro mainly used those documents and then would leverage Fiserv. We had worked on an integration with SageWorks, but it never went live. We tried to keep everything in Fiserv. When I met the head lender, I walked into his office and there were stacks. He was actually sitting in front of his desk with a little pullout because his desk was covered in these reams of paper. He didn't trust tech. He wanted to have everything in paper.
Was this post-2020?
This was actually 2020-2021. They averaged 1,000 pages of print per employee per month.
It is hard to realize how antiquated some of these institutions still are. Was this a bank with $2 billion worth of assets?
It was about $600 million at that point. We grew to just under $2 billion over the next 5 years.
Why did you change from Fiserv Premier to Jack Henry?
When these cores are coming in to sell, they typically fly in, take you to a nice dinner, and the next day everyone gets in a room and they spend all day running through their platform. We did that and decided to break it down. I would do finance in the morning for Fiserv and Jack Henry in the afternoon. The next week, we would do DDA, then alternate which company went first, then do lending and break it down like online banking. That way you remained really focused and didn't get lost over the course of a day looking at it. From the employee feedback I received, only one module, the finance GL functions, lost to Fiserv. That allowed us to have fresh eyes. I realized they were very similar from a functionality perspective. The team said that Jack Henry was slightly more intuitive for the users. We also happened to be close to Jack Henry, so people were familiar with it. I let the employees vote, and they leaned towards Jack Henry. Then it came down to money. I negotiated between the two and didn't think Jack Henry would get close to Fiserv, but we got close enough where it was a negligible difference from a cost perspective. There was nearly $4 million left on the table from Fiserv when we left, from incentives that we walked away from.
That is meaningful, even for a bank.
That $4 million was spread out, so it was about $500,000 a year. We were making $7 to $10 million annually, so it equated to 5% of the net income.
Jack Henry came in slightly higher, but what was the percentage difference?
A lot of it was projections based on my part to get it similar. I negotiated a cap. I had two things that I was able to get that most banks wouldn't know to ask for. They offered per-account pricing, so it did not matter whether it was a loan or a CD. I paid the same, even though the CD is not nearly as complex as the loan is. I would pay the $2 or $3 each month. That was calculated by the number of accounts they converted. I said they couldn't have more than 6% growth overall. We were almost doubling every year and hitting that cap immediately, so that saved us a lot of money. I also negotiated to have all the current products that Jack Henry included in the contract because sales often forgot to include it, or I would lose leverage once I had signed. There was a lot more products that Jack Henry gave, and they had a cap. Fiserv was not going to give me all the products. They gave me more credits to use, but they didn't discount as much. Fiserv offers incentives to use however you like. Jack Henry discounts the products directly, so you don't have that reduction. It is not an apples-to-apples comparison, but they were pretty much the same. At the end of the day, it was a non-factor from a financial perspective.
You already had Premier, and your contract was up for renewal. I understand that Jack Henry walks you through the entire platform, but if you were to renew with Fiserv Premier, would you still have the same product, or were they trying to sell you an upgraded version?
The core and database would stay the same, but they were updating their video online banking modules. My challenge was in the customer records. We found some T1 lines, which is old stuff that hadn't been updated, and it was negatively impacting the performance. We were going to have to update and convert the customer records because the bank hadn't kept up to date on it. I had a colleague who had 17 different customer records on Fiserv because they would simply open a new one. For him to find which account, especially if it was a charity that he doesn't deal with very often, it was very difficult because they had to go through all these different 17 ports to get it up. There was a functionality graph back when I started my career, which the COO always loved to tout. The bank's knowledge of the functionality is here. Our functionality is here. We move the functionality here. But the bank's knowledge actually goes down because they don't keep up with it. This gap gets bigger and bigger between the actual functionality and the bank's knowledge. While the base framework remains the same, you will always be learning about the new components after an update, which occur every 5 to 7 years.
It seems that it is mostly on the complementary parts, though. It is interesting that your team, which was basically trained on Fiserv, still preferred Jack Henry.
They had worked in Jack Henry before. We were the only Fiserv bank in the area. So unless you started at OMB and worked your way up, you were probably familiar with Jack Henry. Both our deposit and lending operations managers, who are the ones on the system the most or oversee the teams, were the most knowledgeable on Fiserv, and they both retired before we did the conversion. We knew there was always going to be a learning gap, but that was unique to that institution and that timing. It was an opportunity for the bank to do a full reset and get a brand new tech stack.
If I were to look 25 years ago compared to today, how has the importance of different parts of the tech stack changed? Which layers of the tech stack have become more or less important? And how does that translate into the economics and the pricing of those?
25 years ago, we were still on tape. There would be updates monthly where they would ship out these tapes that the banks would update their core platform. 2020 was the largest for Jack Henry, and you couldn't customize it at all. It was out of the box. This is what it is. You can use it. Silver Lake was a little more customizable. Everything was brick and mortar. I think NetTeller was purchased in 1999. I joined the company in 2000 on the core side. If I thought a conversion would go well, I remember others saying that NetTeller would screw it up. Online banking was novel. Al Gore had just invented the internet. You probably don't get that reference.
Not the internet part, but I know of Al Gore.
He at one point claimed that he invented the internet. I don't know the whole context, but I always make fun of him. Digital banking was just coming up, and once iPhones came out in 2006, that changed how the front end worked even more. To this day, the digital banks still lean on their brick-and-mortar branches, the lending relationships, and the core. But you are definitely seeing it change, as a result of phones and wearables become more prevalent, in addition to agentic commerce. I believe in embedded finance and banking as a service. Cores don't like it, but they are being forced to adopt it. You see that with Jack Henry's acquisition of Victor Technologies several months ago. Fiserv has Finxact. FIS got Atelier, but they kind of folded it down. They still have it, but spent a lot of money without knowing what they were doing. When I was growing up, you would look at a map, and a black dot would say, "You are here." If I was in an amusement park or my car, we would have the map and move around. Now we have our phones, which have a blue dot, and the world moves around me as a blue dot. We have moved from a black dot to a blue dot generation. The bank's black dot is the brick and mortar and require their customers to go to wherever they are on that map. They can reach that blue generation to move their products to the phone by partnering with a fintech. If you are on a gaming app like Roblox and are in the middle of an epic battle and decide you need to send money, you can do that directly from there. That is only one use case. There are neobanks that are focusing on the front end. I signed one that was a $2 billion AUM technology company. They were a small business focusing on the front end, the customer experience, but they were using my payment rails to move money and my ledger to store money. I was simply empowering that. Banks take a backseat to the front end to focus on what they do best, which is traditional banking. The tech takes that and becomes a disruptor to the core's strategy, what they want to do. I heard the CTO of Jack Henry tell me a couple years ago that they were going to continue to work to put fintechs inside banking infrastructure. I told him he would fail because it was no longer me buying a Q2 and putting it as my digital account, or finding the next novel thing for my digital banking. It is a flip-flop of who the front end is. Core companies have either adapted to that or are trying to. That will become amplified, though, with AI once we have agentic commerce. White label banking today is embedded finance, banking as a service. The next iteration of that is where there is no human, simply money being exchanged for services or products.
With that whole opportunity to change your core, what were the other parts of the stack you identified, such as digital banking or loan origination? Once you made that decision, what were the parts of the stack where you spent the most time and attention to choose the right one?
You hit the two big ones. Digital includes both a mobile and desktop app. There is also a chat vendor for the digital account opening experience. Lending is the other side, which is where banks make their money. On the digital side, we were going to go with a provider that was only digital. What we found was the cost differential between a Q2 or a Narmi and Banno was high. The marginal difference, you were never going to make that unless you had a massive consumer base. We were always commercial-based, so Banno was good enough. It wasn't super exciting, but it wasn't terrible either. Because it is tied to the core, it is going to be a lot cheaper. I have a single contact or company that is responsible if there are issues, because whenever there is a third party involved, that gets complicated. We went with Banno. What I like about Banno versus Fiserv is the ability to integrate with other providers. Fiserv had middleware, but it was incredibly cost prohibitive. I would pay about $50,000 a year for that platform. If I wanted to integrate with an online account opening provider, I would have to pay for that integration. That would cost another $60,000 to $75,000. And then every year they will charge me about 20 to 25% of that just to maintain it. That adds up really quickly to have those third-party integrations. Jack Henry has middleware called JXchange. The fintech pays for it, not the bank. It costs around $30,000 to get certified and $4,000 or $5,000 a year to use the JXchange to add those integrations. Those figures are from 5 years ago.
You mentioned Banno for digital banking. What did you use for commercial mortgage loan origination and digital account opening?
I think we went with the Jack Henry product. We struggled because of how they presented themselves. I'm drawing a blank on the name because I don't get along with the head of that division, Scimitar. I butted heads with them a few times.
Was that the Jack Henry one?
Yes, we went with Jack Henry for loans. The forms were where we had the most challenges. We had a forms company called CSI. They changed their name. We moved to them at Jack Henry's recommendation instead of Laser Pro. I am stuck on Loan Pro today. The integration wasn't there, so we had to work with them. It was the companies pointing at each other. We had to get all three groups together, and we got there eventually, but it was a challenge. The lending team had been that way for as long as I was around the bank, and it sounded like years before that as well. That was definitely a challenging part of the move.
It seems that, in the end, you did go with a lot of the bundled add-ons from Jack Henry. Why didn't more third-party vendors win out, like Q2, Alchemy, or MeridianLink?
Alchemy at the time started largely as a credit union shop. I love Backbase, but they were too expensive, as was Q2. We looked at Narmi and actually signed with them for online account opening. But then there were some compliance hurdles that we disagreed on. We ended up leaving Narmi and going back to Jack Henry's product for digital account opening. I did sign with Agent IQ for a chat-based product.
Was that nCino?
No, Agent IQ was a spinoff from Umpqua Bank, and it is just a chat product. nCino is more of a lending small business platform.
They have Banker Advisor, which is a different product.
Bits of Stock is a rewards program where you can earn fractional shares of stock. We were the first bank to sign with that. We did bring in some third parties. I moved from 2020 to 2023, maybe even shorter than that. I moved from a traditional banking mindset of the Black Knight generation, or even having digital as the leader, to embedded finance. How do I build this up? What is it, first of all? And then how do I go to market? I was just trying to figure that out. When I did that, it's like Treasury Prime as a subledger. I had Alloy for KYC and KYB. I had Cable for my compliance testing. Transaction monitoring was Verafin. But we were quickly going to have to shift to Unit 21. You see a lot more of that as you step away from the core, which is why cores don't want you to do it. You have more specialized third-party offerings. It is always easier to go with the core if they have a product. In my mind, do what you can with the core, but specialize in your niche. Whatever that specialty is, that is where you really need to go for the third party. Otherwise, you are simply going to lose money. I couldn't go with a Q2 or a Narmi for my consumer digital product because I would lose money. Having more consumer accounts that I lose money on, I don't want to sell more of those. I make money on commercial loans, which is why the lending platform is such an important part of that puzzle.
On core conversion and the economics of that, and the financial decision you needed to make, would your decision have been any different if, instead of growing from $600 million to $2 billion, you were basically steady at $2 billion? Or a more steady growth rate, where you grow the loan book by the return on equity?
That would have made Jack Henry not as big, I think a better way to say it is, if there was a cost differential, would I have moved from Fiserv to Jack? No, probably not. At the end of the day, stingy bankers are going to try to capture every dollar they can. And I am not a traditional community banker. I became a little more of one. It is rare to find a banker who is willing to take on additional cost. Everyone hates their core. Everyone says they're going to change. But then when you think about that core conversion, it scares the hell out of people. And they are not willing to spend the money to get over that hurdle that they could then make more money. I had a slightly different view. I think you have to spend money to make money, which is counterintuitive to most bankers. Knowing that we were going to grow drastically changed the proposal. If I had not been at the bank with my Jack Henry knowledge and experience, we would have never moved.
You were growing pretty fast, and I imagine if the goal was to stay at $600 million, the spending of $1 million on data is a bit of a problem.
If we were staying flat, then yes, you would manage expenses. When you are growing, it is a lot easier to get approval to spend money.
I am curious about the pricing of cores and the products they offer compared to 15 years ago. I will share my hypothesis on it, but I have no idea whether it is true or not. It seems that the cores are still very sticky and hard to replace for all the reasons you mentioned. People don't really replace them, but their place in the tech stack gets less important over time, where the value is mostly in digital or loan origination software and digital account opening. The cores cannot really raise the prices as fast as a Q2 or Alchemy could. Does that sound right, or am I missing something?
There was a shift between 2010 and 2020 in pricing from a pure asset model where, based on my AUM, there is a corresponding price. If there was a bank in Naples, Florida, where there is a lot of money, so you got these big depositors, the AUM is really high, but you have this very small account number. The pricing didn't always work, and it shifted from the AUM to more of a per-account basis. They still have some of the AUM stuff, but there was a shift there. They tried to simplify the billing, which it never did that very well. But if my contract comes up, they know I'm going to expect a discount. So what they are charging for the core is going down. They're hoping that new accounts will help fill that gap. But then you see the acquisitions of digital account opening and other products. The salesperson's goal is typically to at least flatline top-line revenue. They will discount other products but add in third-party. Your price stays the same, but you show value with other products. That has been a strategy I typically see. They don't want the top-line to go down, so they simply add on the ancillary products to it.
Using a very simplified, if you pay $1,000 per year for the core, 7 years later when a contract comes up, you are expecting to pay less. But to keep it at $1,000, they include Banno and digital account opening. You are getting more for the same price, so the real pricing is actually going down.
It is, which is why they are trying to add new products. If you look at Jack Henry and their cloud-native core they are developing, they are selling components. They're saying if you have Silverlake, you can go to this cloud component. They're going to try to charge more, but it will probably come through new accounts where the bank is growing, or new customers where they can get a bank from an FIS or a Fiserv.
You mentioned embedded finance several times. Could you explain that to a 12-year-old?
It is white label banking at the base layer. I have a company like a Treasury Prime that will have my subledger, and a 12-year-old won't know what a subledger is, nor an API, but a tech company.
I have an idea of what an API is. Is the subledger the general ledger for your bank?
Yes, it is a general ledger for customers. Keep in mind that in most cases, I am paying the core company for every account I have. I don't want to do that. Plus, my core company doesn't have APIs that I can give to you so you can deposit money. You could send an ACH or a wire, or you could transfer money between accounts. I don't have those APIs because that is in my core traditional banking stack. There is one account on the core, then that breaks down. For example, the FBO contains $3,000. Alan has $1,000, I have $1,000, and my dog has $1,000. That breakdown is going to be on my subledger. The sum of the subledger matches one account on the core. If I have a company that has all these accounts, it is very cost prohibitive. So I have a subledger. The same KYC, KYB, AML, BSA, all the alphabet soup has to be monitored in that. It is going to have integrations here, running through and making sure I am compliant and opening it. That customer never knows that the bank is there because they are interfacing with a different app, which has a different brand and logo. That fintech is taking the APIs and putting it in. While I am looking at my inventory and checking that, I can immediately pay my bill with transferring money. I don't have to go to my banking app, set up a bill pay, send money, whatever that use case is. It is a whole new tech stack, or mostly new tech stack. It can leverage the bank's core ACH wires. I had an integration to that, but it is really important. Money transfer licenses. Companies cannot move money on behalf of someone else unless they have a money transfer license, or if they are a bank. Money transfer licenses are different in each state. Each state has their own requirements and license. It is really difficult to get 50 different MTLs. It is cheaper to rent a charter from the bank that can move money in all 50 states. That is where the for benefit of comes in. Legally, you have to name that, but basically you can rent a charter from the bank, take their money movement and money storage products, then embed it into your customer base that are doing whatever it is that your business does.
The way you describe it suggests that the core is still being leveraged and still delivers value at the end of the day. It helps you move the money, do the ACH transfer, and has general ledger, but it is really not capturing any of it.
It provides value, but instead of it being the center of your operations, it is now just data processing. Core is really hard to do, which is why we only have three. People don't realize the intricacies of having a GL that has interest, your commercial loans, all the complexities there. It gets complex really fast, and it is really hard. It is easy to simplify it. You have seen Mambu come up and kind of go away. They tried in the US, and I am pretty sure they have exited. They were all over the place. They never could figure out exactly how to do it. Core banking is hard, but what I need from you is much less. I need you to have that GL and those other components. There is value, but it is not a differentiator. It is not going to help me compete. It is not only banks that are stealing my customers or providing services. There are also tech companies that are coming to market.
You need a database, but it is only in the background. What are the places that you do care about because they are vital to your success and you making money? The parts of the stack where you actually need the best in class or best of breed of everything because it gives you an edge as a bank.
Are you talking to me as a banker, or are you talking to an average community banker? Because those answers are different.
You can answer both in your seat, as someone who is responsible for making the decision.
If you are not being tech forward, it comes down to this. Every community bank says that what differentiates them is their customer service, and that doesn't fundamentally change. But instead of having your local relationships, like I have relationships in the town, I am part of the chamber. I'm going to all these different meetings and clubs and seeing these people and capturing local commercial business. It is a relationship. Your people are probably more important than your tech in that regard. If I go out to a farm and he needs something, I want to have my iPad there and be able to open an account or move money and not be constrained to the brick and mortar. That is really what the fundamentals were for that. If I am more tech forward, I'm going to look for embedded finance. I'm no longer tied to the local brick and mortar. I will have a nationwide distribution channel where my fintech partner is. They are capturing the customer and bringing them to me. I really want to focus on the tech that enables others to use my product, like the APIs. There have been so many consent orders. The examiners came down really hard the past few years, so I need to ensure I'm doing it in a compliant manner. I'm going to focus on the compliance tools and my subledger, so I don't become another Synapse. What makes me a bank is a charter. How do I keep my charter? It is because I am compliant. So I really lean into RegTech, which is pretty hot these days. I think anti-fraud will be even hotter as well. I mean, AML. BSA is compliance heavy typically. So I'm focusing on those areas. There is a bank I have been talking to a group about whether they should purchase it. They are currently in bankruptcy because they allowed the wrong investors in and had some foreign money movement that got flagged. The regulators forced them into bankruptcy court. So either they sell or lose their charter. That is because they didn't have the appropriate compliance guardrails in place. If you want to keep your bank, you have to keep your compliance.
What are the compliance parts of the system or SaaS products, data products, that you really cannot do without or are really good?
Your KYC, when you're doing that OFAC check when you sign up, making sure that people are who they say they are, especially if you are doing it remotely. If you walk into the branch, you can show your ID. But how do I verify that ID is real if you are doing it online? Alloy is one. Another is Footprint, who have impressed me with their amazing team. We are getting ready to sign a contract with them and put them on our advisory board. They are doing KYC, KYB, checking you are who you say you are, doing OFAC checks, seeing if you are a politically exposed person. All those compliance pieces that you have to check those boxes when you open that account up front. After that account is open, comes vendor management. If I have a fintech, there is enhanced due diligence on those providers I have to manage. If they are a critical vendor, they have to be SOC 2 compliant. That has to be updated annually. So there is all that management of my vendor management, third-party TPRM, those things. Then when you get to the actual account usage, is there money laundering? So AML, your Bank Secrecy Act, filing SARs. Are they doing something like cannabis, firearms, gambling, or adult sites? It is about having foresight. There's anti-money laundering and also fraud. I recently heard about a company talking about these organized businesses that are going around to different banks opening accounts and then just taking the money. They are fraudulent businesses. That is KYB, KYC, authenticating that it is actual before the money is dispersed. Whether it is a loan or deposit they are using for a romance scheme, or they are just moving money for that.
Over the next 5 to 10 years, what banking software vendors or categories of vendors do you see doing really well and would pay most attention to?
I think there will be a lot of consolidation. The U.S. has 4,000 banks, 9,000 financial institutions. They have been talking about that for years, but I think it is coming faster than people think. I'm a big proponent of embedded finance. I think that is such a huge part of the future of banking. There are certain things that will be table stakes, and the core platform is definitely one of those. But the agentic commerce, I need to have my TPRM, is going to be huge. But the AML, like fraud monitoring, actual transactional data.
Do you mean the actual transactional data?
The fraudsters are going to become more and more complex. I'm going to need a tech stack that can keep up with the fraudsters, that can keep up with agentic commerce, which is going to take off at some point. I'm going to be moving money without even realizing it, because I'm going to be focused on other things, and my agent is going to be off taking care of it. AI is the hot topic. We are going to see some retraction on it, but from a financial services standpoint, that is going to change the way we bank and move money. I absolutely have to nail the core, the GL, those components. I am more concerned with how are we moving money over the next 5 to 10 years, and how do we make sure that that money is not being done so in a fraudulent manner or money laundering function.